Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hello, I'm Susan Violante, and I am honored to be the host of Irene Watson's tribute, a celebration of her life. Irene was born in northern Alberta in Canada in 1946. Her career took her from career counseling to business ownership to working in management for a police force to spiritual counseling to teaching at a college to retreat, seminar, workshop, design, and facilitation, and to her most recent, owning and managing Readerviews. She obtained her BS in psychology at the St. Edward's University in Austin, Texas, and her MA in psychology from Regis University in Denver, Colorado. She did try to retire in 2003, but she was not made for retirement. Irene authored an award-winning memoir, The Sitting Swing, which was published in October 2005. Having a hard time getting reviews for her book, she started Readerviews, and the rest was history. Irene was a pioneer and a defining force in what we know as the publishing industry today. Irene transitioned, surrounded by her husband of 45 years, Robert, and her two children, Juanita and Darren, as well as her daughter-in-law, Christine, this year, 2012. She was grandmother to Kyle and his siblings, Caitlin and Kiefer. She is greatly missed by all of her loved ones and her Readerviews family. I would like to thank everybody in Loving Healing Press, especially Victor Volkman, for all the recordings that he sent to me to make this production possible. And also Cyrus West for allowing us to use portions of an interview that he held earlier this year with Irene. I also would like to thank all of you authors who had a chance to get to know her and were so supportive this last few months with her. She was an inspiration, a mentor, and a friend to anybody and everybody who came into contact with her. Here she is. Let's all celebrate Irene Watson.
Hi, this is Irene.
Hi, this is Victor.
You're listening to a special sneak preview edition of Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful.
I'm Victor Volkman, and I'm speaking from Ann Arbor, Michigan, with Irene Watson of Readerviews, and I'm going to ask her a few questions so we can get to know her for the purposes of the show. Irene, I hear you're an author, that's correct?
Yes, I am, Victor. I did write a book. I wrote a memoir on my life and some of the issues that I had growing up as a child, and I was able to get over them, and I end up putting that in my past and moving forward and living a fulfilled life. I did publish The Sitting Swing in October of 2005.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I have two very special guests on the program, Victor Volkman and Irene Watson. They are co-editors of the new book, Authors Access, 30 Success Secrets for Authors and Publishers. They're here today, and they are going to be talking a little bit about this book and their internet radio show, Authors Access, which this book is loosely based on. So that said, I want to welcome you both to the show.
Thanks, Juanita. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Good, Victor. Nice to talk with you. Okay, so from really what I understand, the two of you have been working together for about 3 years. Is that true?
Yes, we have. Not on Authors Access, but being aware of our review service, and Victor is a publisher, he has been working with us as, you know, for us providing reviews and publicity. However, we started Authors Access about 2 years ago, and we co-host that, and so we've been working together on Authors Access for the last 2 years.
Well, what was the original vision for Authors Access? How did that collaboration start?
Basically, to give authors, specifically new authors, writers that want to become authors, and also publishers, just some inside information from experts. And so what we do is we interview a variety of experts from anything to do with editing and publishing and writing and websites and social media, anything to do with promotion,
you know, basically anything to do with the book, period. And we just ask these experts all for their information, and they share it with us. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Arthur M. Mills, Jr., and actually he is stationed in the military in Korea. He is also the author of the award-winning book, The Empty Lot Next Door. You know, I've told you this story before, but the listening audience may not know this. After I had read this book, and a friend of mine read the book as well, we decided to make a trip to the street. She brought her two kids with her, and I brought my husband and my granddaughter. She had just arrived from Canada, and so we were going to go and just walk the street. And, of course, all the street is one block. And the interesting part was that we parked at one end, walked to the other end, and as we were walking back and closer to the vehicle we were at and sort of in front of the where the empty lot was and where you used to live, we turned around and we saw behind us a figure of a girl. And we all just looked at each other, and it was like spooky because, of course, the story is spooky. And here's this tall blonde. We couldn't see the face because it was dark, even though there was a street light, but the long hair and the light clothing. And so we all just looked at each other, didn't say a word, and we started walking faster and got into the vehicle, and it's like, oh! But what was interesting, Art, is when Susan, my assistant, showed me the picture of the cover that you were taking votes on, it's like I looked at her and I said, oh, my goodness, that's exactly what we saw, although we didn't see the face, but the clothing and the long blonde hair. So it was like, oh. And then when we got in the vehicle and left and we went for ice cream after, we had to kind of like all settle down. It's like, was this a real person or was this candlestick?
Yeah, that is very interesting because I have had a lot of reader comments from people from the neighborhood,
uh-huh.
from the South Austin, Ben Howell neighborhood that has emailed me and given me their accounts of possibly running into Candleface.
You mentioned, Art, that you came from a dysfunctional family. And so as your brother Richard was going through these torments, this bullying, was there any discussion of bullying within your home? Were your parents aware what was going on with this child?
We didn't have any discussions with bullying, and that's one of the things that haunt me today. I would say the Candleface thing is gone. You know, it doesn't really haunt me anymore, but it's the lack of family communication that still haunts me. It's why did I not tell my mother about what was going on with Richard? Why couldn't I tell my teachers?
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really, really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Michael Kearns, theater artist, activist, former bad boy, hoaxer, proud father, and author of The Truth, Bad Enough, What Became of the Happy Hustler. So speaking of Hollywood, Michael, there's just some confusion. Is generally Hollywood homophobic?
Well, I think Hollywood remains homophobic, you know. In case in point, the New York Times recently wrote something about Anderson Cooper coming out and saying, you know, well, this is great. I mean, he's not really in Hollywood. He's on the East Coast. But this is great that he came out and blah, blah, blah. But the point is that he was in for how many years? I mean, years and years and years and years and years. And all the time that he was in, he was saying, basically, that there was something wrong with being out. So it took him a long time, in my opinion, to come out. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm really glad he did, and I think he will be a role model and all that.
Yeah.
And, of course, we still have some famous names, which I'm not going to name because they're so obvious, who are firmly in the closet and firmly in denial.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also as well known as the fact that Marilyn Monroe is no longer alive that they're gay.
Yes, yes.
So what's that about? I mean, that can be called nothing but homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, on the one hand, yes, we've moved forward. Have we moved forward as quickly as I envisioned or I had hoped for? No, by no means.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, this is Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. I'm delighted to be speaking on the phone with Susan Violante. She is the author of Innocent War. So speaking of different, when you then started raising a family, did you do it differently?
Oh, yes.
And in what way?
I'm glad that I got this tape when my daughters were very young. I realized that being a mother did not have to become a job. It did not have to become anything that I didn't want it to be. And so my priority was to make sure they knew who I was and to teach them everything that I'm learning. I mean, not pick and choose, okay, you're going to do this and you're going to be like this. No, just kind of embrace their personalities and guide them through everything that they go through by teaching them what I've learned from my experiences and not pretending to be perfect or somebody I'm not. And so I let them see my flaws at the same time that I let them see my traits. And, you know, they know me better than anybody. That's what I did different. I was blessed to be able to do it since they were kids.
So I know that, you know, raising smaller children, it seems to be easier. But once they get to be teens, there's rebellion that happens. I wonder if the success you did with your girls, because, you know, all of a sudden they didn't want to learn from you, because there's a stage that always happens that they know more than everybody else in the whole world.
Yes.
Did that happen to you?
Of course.
And how did you handle it? Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone to Leslie Ferdinand. She is the author of Wicked Allure. The book is multicultural romance with adults-only content. Well, it's interesting you should say, because we know a fellow here, and he's African-American. He is a twin. Mm-hmm. His sister is bright blonde, fair skinned, almost, you know, translucent, and blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the only white one in the family of, I believe that there are like three or four other siblings, but this is a twin situation. So, you know, there we go, and you're talking about, you know, your family, some of them being very fair.
Right, right. And so it's, you know, race is such a sensitive issue and mm-hmm. such a hot button issue, and, but I didn't look at it from the racial perspective. I put multicultural on the title within the disclaimer, I think because, one, we wrote, as Christine Holden before, my mom and I, and we mm-hmm. wrote historical romance and we wrote time travel romance. And I wanted to distinguish that, for one, for anyone who may recognize us from 11 years ago, sure that they knew that this was a different type of book that we were writing. And I was so used to describing it in that way that I didn't even think about it when I wrote multicultural romance with explicit sex and explicit language and some drug use.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it just came up that way, and I'm wondering, will that turn readers off, or will that draw some people in? I want people to read the story. It's a universal story, you know, because these people are trying to get back together. They're trying to find what can make their relationship work and trying to repair not only their relationship but some other things in their lives that need working on. And we all want that. It doesn't matter what color you are, what race you are. We're all searching to better ourselves, and a lot of us are looking for people to love.
You know, that is such a good point, and it really doesn't matter what color you are, what race, what culture, you know, wherever you live. I think that that is the bottom line in the whole world, really.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
Irene, welcome back to Conversations Live.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, definitely glad to do it. Irene, now, you are no stranger to this program, and you have been very active in helping to promote authors in the past. For our listeners that are just now hearing about you, though, before we get into the ReaderView's Literary Awards, let's talk a little bit about your journey. When did you first realize, Irene, that writing was something you wanted to do?
Well, I think it's always as a child and growing up, you know, I have sort of the classic story. I always wanted to be a writer and attempted to. And I remember one time, I'm not sure how old I was, maybe 10 years old, and I was in living out in the country, and we used to get this farm type of newspaper that came, and in the center section was this children's section. And kids would write in stories or poetry and so on. And, oh, I wanted to enter, and I entered something. I found a poem that I liked it, and I plagiarized it, and I sent it in. That
wow.
was my first writing experience. And guess what? They rejected it.
Wow.
But, you know, then as life went on, and I retired the first time, and I wrote my book. I authored a book. And put it out and published it. And since then, I just got into the publishing industry and found a need, and a need that actually I couldn't find on the internet when I was trying to publicize my book.
Mm-hmm.
And so after I got the book out and so on, I established ReaderView's.
Yeah, yeah. And ReaderView's has, and you've talked about it on this program before, Irene, does a great service to be able to help bring attention to authors, as I mentioned, that may not get the recognition they deserve. And there, I believe, and I'll get your thoughts on this because you deal with this on a day-to-day basis, I believe that, you know, there has been such a stigma in the past about authors that are self-published or even what might be considered the quote-unquote vanity presses. Just the very name has a connotation that doesn't sound too good, but wouldn't you agree that really self-publishing has evolved a lot over the years, and now thanks to great services, that authors are able to, on their own, put out quality books?
Exactly, exactly. You know, I don't know where it even came about at one time. I mean, when we look back, some of the, you know, well-known authors self-published.
Mm-hmm.
But someplace along the way, I think some armchair experts came into the fold and really poo-pooed self-publishing and vanity presses. And granted, you know, some of the vanity presses that came out in the early years, they were scams. And so, you know, as the years went by, there is an evolvement. And gosh, you know, with 3 million titles published each year, most of those are self-published. And it's becoming really easy. And I really think that a lot of that stigma is only in the self-publishing, or pardon me, in the publishing industry. I don't think that, and I'm just kind of thinking about myself, that before I published my first book, I really didn't know anything about self-publishing. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that there was such a thing. I was just reading books. And
right.
who published them really wasn't even in my radar.
Right, right.
And I'm sure I'm not the only one.
Hello, and welcome to a special sneak preview edition of Authors Readings, where books come alive. This week, we're featuring a reading by Tracy Simpson from Irene Watson's new book, The Sitting Swing, Finding the Wisdom to Know the Difference. From Loving Healing Press. You can learn more about this book at www.irenewatson.com. Sit back and listen to the voice of Tracy Simpson.
It was the damnedest thing that they thought I'd fall for it. A video camera in plain sight in one corner of my room pointing right in on everything I'd be doing for the next 28 days. Not likely. I couldn't figure out why they wouldn't bother hiding the thing. Even a hanging plant in front of it might have kept me from noticing it for an hour or two. But they didn't even try. And that was their real weakness as far as I was concerned. Here they were, helping some of the most messed up people you can imagine, people addicted to just about anything, and they thought if they had cameras watching these people get dressed, watching them sleep, that they would just reveal everything about themselves in an instant? Some experts. I started to wonder why I'd paid good money to be here. But there it is. We all want to fit in. I had many friends graduate from this utopian little institute, and they all swore it changed their lives. They all used Avalon talk, as I called it, the catchphrases and jargon used in this Avalon Center. Tiring as it was to listen to their new language, they were my friends, and it was even more of a challenge to be outside the group in that way. So I decided to call some of my own challenges addictions and to make a trip here. 28 days of dealing with real addicts, then I could graduate and get back on the inside track with my friends. I pulled a chair out from the small desk and turned it to face the camera, then sat and reclined myself a bit against its stiff back. I folded my arms across my chest and looked with a cold grit at the camera. I probably looked the way my own kids did when they decided to pull the rebel thing. It's not that I was overly confrontational. The camera was a statement, and I would make one right back. I stared it down, just hoping someone was watching me live. I wanted my eyes to tell the story. You might have stuck me here. You might control a lot of what I do, and I might even tell you a thing or two about myself, but you're not invading my privacy. There was a me I would share. There was a me I would not. After a three-minute stare down, I got up from my seat and rummaged through my suitcase, pulling out a white washcloth. That would do the trick. I walked to the camera and flipped the cloth up over the thing, covering its lens. I brushed my hands against each other in a mocking way. Done and done, I thought. The camera wasn't the only reason I felt this place was like a prison. For starters, you weren't allowed to bring books, magazines, tapes, a radio. No incoming phone calls, either. They pretty much had your input covered. From then on, you'd get input from them or from your own brain, and that was about it. And just like in prison, everything I'd need for those 28 days I had to bring with me, clothes, toiletries, extra money. Well, they did offer things like massages, so cash wasn't a bad idea. But isn't that a little like pleasantries to keep shackled people happy? Amazing that I'd heard nothing but good things about the place from my friends. Most of these points I knew ahead of time, but the camera had put me on edge. Maybe the big joke among the graduates was to get other people to attend so they'd experience a month of prison too, sort of a hazing ceremony to get back inside with your friends. Looking at my surroundings, that didn't seem out of the question. The place was called Avalon with good reason. Well, it wasn't as glorious as the island from the Arthurian legends, where magic was said to reside and where Arthur himself was supposedly healed of a mortal wound. But the place was on an island, relatively hidden from the world, connected to the mainland only by a long and narrow bridge. Maybe half a mile from the center, there was a very small resort community, with a resident population of 500 year-round, and twice that in the summertime. It wasn't what you'd call a booming tourist destination, but it had its visitors. A road circling the island connecting the community, the center, and the substantial woods covering the area. Those woods and this room seemed the only real havens, now that the camera was out of the loop, where I would have some time myself. The rest of Avalon was made up of common rooms where groups would gather either for recreation or for talking sessions led by the staff. Those were the sessions I'd been told when people learned what it meant to open themselves up in front of a bunch of other addicts. And if scrutiny from other addicts wasn't bad enough, that's when the staff would direct you to confront all your issues. I wasn't one to avoid issues, but there are two facts about that. First, you don't deal with that stuff in front of other people. On that point, I was sure. The last thing people need on their path to healing is to have a bunch of others judging them. Second, I had some disappointments about my life so far, but I doubted that any of my challenges really counted as issues. Not things that had to be fixed by professionals. Pain about some choices I'd made, yes. A bit of insecurity about who I was, yes. I wanted to spend time thinking about these and setting new goals. Surely new goals would help point to the real me, as my friends now put it. But I just couldn't see how these could be fixed with therapy. After all, a little pain and a little insecurity didn't make me broken. I sighed a deep sigh. Like it or not, I was here now, and I had paid to be here. 28 days. I'd better settle in as best as I could, so I started to unpack. I opened my few drawers and started setting in my clothes. I thought about the airport where I'd arrived. At a small bar near the luggage, I had met many of my fellow addicts as we waited for a ride to the center, and I watched in disbelief as many of them chugged down drinks. I said a silent prayer of thanks that if I had to be surrounded by addicts, At least I wasn't really one myself. I felt sorry for them, but I was grateful not to be among their ranks. There were kids here in their 20s and elders in their 70s, people up and down the scale who had seen something wrong with life and wanted it fixed. There was something positive about that, and as much as I pitied most of them, I also had a small sense of hope. As I finished unpacking my clothes, I smiled with that in mind. And then I looked up to see a woman staring into my room from the bathroom, toothbrush held in her mouth. I sighed again. 48 years old, and I was sharing a bathroom with a perfect stranger who seemed interested in spying on me. I say spying because she wasn't looking at me. She was looking at the washcloth over the camera. I pretended not to notice what she was looking at. She walked back to spit out some toothpaste. When I knew she was finished, I went in to introduce myself. Irene Watson, I said, hand out for her to shake. She took my hand, but looked sort of absently past my shoulder. What's that rag doing up there? I shrugged. A little privacy never bothered anyone, don't you think? She blinked, then looked at me maybe for the first time. Sure. She wandered back to her bedroom, and I didn't learn till later that her name was Gabby. Gabriella, in fact. A native Puerto Rican living now in Connecticut. She went by Gabby, and later I decided it was a good name for her. Yes, things were off to a terrific start. My best course of action was becoming clear all the time. Give them some things about me to play with, to feel if they could fix. Show how happy I was to have my problems resolved, and what a different person I could be at graduation. That way I wouldn't be opening up to people like Gabby or to people who would put cameras in my room. And along the way, I could make use of the retreat, open up, perhaps, and spend time in personal reflection. Then at graduation, maybe I really would be different. They could let me go, believing they'd made a difference, and I would leave knowing I had made a difference on my own. But that's not how it worked at all.
Thank you for listening to this special sneak preview edition of Authors Readings, where books come alive. This week, we've been listening to a reading by Tracy Simpson from Irene Watson's new book, The Sitting Swing, Finding the Wisdom to Know the Difference, from Loving Healing Press. You can learn more about this book at www.irenewatson.com. I'm Victor Volkman. Thanks for tuning in to our podcast.